This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Knicks win 110-93 tonight. Interesting game. It was a tribute night to Walt Clyde Frazier to talk about the Knicks, their season, and to look ahead. We bring in Benji Ritzholtz from the Knicks Film School. And Benji, welcome to the program.
Lori, what an honor to be here with you. Thank you for having me on.
You're very welcome. Let's start off with, for people who are not following you on Twitter, on X, and they should. But for people who are not yet, tell them what the kind of work that you're doing and the kind of content they can get at Knicks Film School.
That's very kind of you. Yeah, we're breaking down the film of every single Knicks game, every single Knicks possession. We're really in the weeds. So if you're somebody who likes to think about the game, kind of the next layer of the game, what's actually going on in terms of X's and O's, adjustments, tactics, all that kind of stuff. That's really where we come in and try to break down the game for you. So we do that over Twitter, podcasts, and then on our Patreon feed, on our Patreon as well. So that's where you can find us, and that's kind of what we do.
All right. And so now, big picture with this Knicks team and tonight's game and all of that, let's start off with tonight was a Clyde Frazier tribute night. And so for you as a Knicks fan, what has Clyde meant to you and why do you think he is so important to the fans?
It's, I think, on a lot of different levels. You know, for someone of my age, I'm 32 years old. So for me, I didn't get to watch him or anywhere near that, obviously. But I have had the privilege of listening to him for my entire life, basically. And I think what Clyde, and I add Breen to this as well, what they've kind of brought to the table for Knicks fans who have been suffering for decades, and to at least every night you turn on MSG and you at least are privileged to listen to those two guys, even when the product on the court was terrible. they brought it, and it allowed for an enjoyable experience even when the team was bad for many, many years. So I think that's what Clyde means, like, most personally to me. But I've had the opportunity to break down some of his films. You know, they're available on YouTube, so people should go back and watch in the early 70s what Clyde Frazier was able to do. And he was a tremendous basketball player. And he would translate today. Maybe it would look a little bit different, but, man, the defensive skills, the way he could force turnovers, the high-release jump shot, like, he would be good in any era. He was a terrific athlete. So anyone who hasn't had the chance to go watch him play should pull it up on YouTube. I think it's worthwhile.
Now looking ahead to this team, and what have you taken away from the last 12 games when Jalen Brunson has been out injured, the bad ankle, and how the team has played? What stood out to you over these 12 games?
I think the largest improvement the team has made is actually defensively. And they have been a top 10, top 8 defense since he went down over the course of these games. And, part of that is just Brunson being a bit of a weak point on that end, if we're being honest. He's very limited. Not that he doesn't try hard, but he just doesn't have tremendous defensive capabilities. And filling his role with the likes of Deuce McBride and now DeLon Wright, who are both very positive defensive players, you're seeing kind of that defensive difference. And on the offensive end, I think the increased aggression from both OG Anunoby and Mikal Bridges more than anything else. I think those two guys have really worked to fill in the gaps that Brunson leaves. They have the ball more. They've been more aggressive. They're getting to the rim more. And that's the kind of stuff we were hoping to see when Brunson went down, to see if those guys could really pick up the slack.
talking to Benji Ritholtz from Knicks Film School about the Knicks. And so how do you think that they can maintain that level of offensive improvement aggression that we've seen from, let's say, an OG when Brunson gets back? How do you balance that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think for OG, it's a simpler proposition because I think OG's doing a lot of his work either in transition or just on the catch and drive and go game. He's just shown increased aggression, gotten to the foul line at a career high rate. That's the stuff that I think can translate pretty easily. Maybe it's incumbent upon Brunson to push the pace a little bit more often. The Knicks generally play pretty slow. So try to get out in transition, find OG on those early seals, give him open courts to really drive into and use that little Euro game that he's developed, use his strength to get to the basket. That's the easier one that I think can translate if OG just maintains that aggression when he gets the ball from Brunson. The Bridges side of it is maybe a bit more complicated because they've actually run the offense through him a lot through pick and rolls, dribble handoffs, those types of actions. Will those be available to him once Brunson's back? Probably incumbent upon Brunson to try to include him in the offense a little bit more, but that one's a little bit more challenging because I think he's occupying the spaces that the team wants Jalen Brunson to occupy ideally, right? So how do you balance that? It's going to be an interesting question once Jalen returns.
And as for some of the defensive improvement, as you said, some of it is simply personnel. Deuce McBride, mm-hmm. We don't think DeLon Wright will play. Once Jalen's back, we're not, and the team is healthy, we don't expect Wright to get a lot of minutes, but Deuce certainly will. How, mm-hmm. if you were advising Tom Thibodeau, how would you figure out how to lock in some of the defensive improvements, knowing that Jalen's going to be playing some big minutes?
Yeah, I think that's been the biggest challenge of the season, right, Lori, is like the inability to get stops consistently with both Brunson and Towns on the floor. That's the challenge of the roster construction that they've built here, is that your two best offensive players are very limited defensive players. I think that Tibbs has relied a little too much on a conservative scheme, considering that personnel. It's a lot of, you see Cat dropping back in pick and roll coverage, and that allows teams to get really comfortable in their offense. I think the solution has to come from a bit more schematic versatility. That means bringing Towns a little bit higher up on screen and roll actions, maybe blitzing actions, and then allowing your wings on the backside, like Bridges and Anunoby, to make plays the way they're very capable of doing, and kind of relieving that pressure off of a Karl-Anthony Towns. So I think it's being a little bit more aggressive in coverage. The truth of the matter is they were getting a little bit better the last few games that Brunson was healthy. So hopefully it was a trend that was beginning to really get to a positive point on the defensive end before Brunson got hurt, and it's just kind of been even better since he went down. So I think there's some hope there that the defense is getting to a better place going into the playoffs.
Let's talk about the bigs a little bit, and Mitchell Robinson, I guess I had higher expectations for him when I thought, well, give him a few games, but he looks slimmed down, and he's been less of a factor than I expected. What are you seeing from Mitchell Robinson, and what's fair to expect from him as the Knicks head into the playoffs?
I think we've seen inconsistency for Mitch. I think some games he's looked spry and athletic and like his old self. In other games, he's looked like he's winded early. And maybe that's just part of the process of a 7-foot-1 dude coming back after missing a season, as it were, and trying to get his wind back. So maybe that is fair to expect and not to judge too harshly. But I think, it's interesting with Mitch because the team has gotten so used to playing with all the spacing that they've developed now with Karl-Anthony Towns at the five. And now you add Mitch back in, and he's someone who's obviously going to be around the rim all the time. And that brings defenders closer to the rim. And so how the Knicks navigate that lack of space that they've become so used to now, I think becomes a little bit of an issue. And when Brunson returns, it becomes even more of an issue if he plays with Jalen Brunson and is clogging the lane for Brunson drive. But I think, on the positive end, He is offensive rebounding again at an extremely high rate. He's amongst the league leaders already in terms of rebounding, offensive rebounding percentage. That's giving the Knicks extra possessions, kickouts for threes. Those are obviously very helpful. And maybe the luxury is they don't have to play him 25, 30 minutes. They can play him 15 to 20, depending on the matchup, depending on how he looks. And they can go and they can obviously play Towns heavy minutes at center or bring in Achiuwa, who had a nice little stint tonight in the second quarter, if the matchup calls for it. So maybe a bit more flexibility where you don't have to rely on Mitch quite to the extent you have in the past.
So you mentioned Tibbs before and some of the schemes. How do you evaluate the job that Tom Thibodeau has done this season? I mean, big picture, of course. Look, Leon Rose in the front office, Tom Thibodeau and the coaching staff, there is a level of competence and consistent quality that we're getting out of the New York Knicks that for a lot of us, you know, kind of felt like we were in a basketball wasteland for most of the last 20 years. So the fact that we actually get to watch a consistently good basketball team is in and of itself a joy and something to be appreciated. With that said, just curious on how you would evaluate the job that Tom Thibodeau has done this year.
I think that he has struggled to adapt a little bit to a very different style team than he's used to and maybe that he prefers. And I think it's fair to criticize him for that. You know, the offense has largely been great. Over the first half of the season, it was spectacular. And I think a couple of adjustments defense has made, including putting centers on Josh Hart and wings on Karl-Anthony Towns, really threw a wrench into the defense, into the Knicks offense. And they haven't really adjusted to those coverages. And that's, I think, a knock on the coach to not necessarily have the flexibility or the strategy to figure out how can we counter that properly to make sure that Towns is still on, you know, in advantageous positions on the offensive end. And I think, look, defensively, he knew he had a limited roster. He's coached Karl-Anthony Towns before. And he's never really gotten the best out of him defensively. You know, Towns, as much as he struggles at the five on defense, had a lot of success at the four in Minnesota. And were there ways the Tibbs could have put OG Anunoby on some centers to hide Towns? He hasn't really done that this season. Now he has the option of putting Mitchell Robinson playing with Towns at times, which has worked a little bit over the course of the last 10, 12 games. The question is going to be, in a playoff setting, can he find ways to hide Cat to ensure that he's not exposed defensively? I think there are options out there at his disposal that he hasn't really experimented with enough this season, and that's been a little bit disappointing. So I think Tibbs is a really good coach. I think he's obviously laid the foundation. To your point, Laurie, he's laid a great foundation here. The question now is, with the talent upgrade that they've gotten, is he the guy to get them to that next level? And I think that's a fair question to ask, and I think these upcoming playoffs will have a lot to say about that question.
All over social media, we, of course, and even with the Mets beat writers in postgame pressers, a lot of the talk around the Knicks is frequently the minutes. And So where do you stand with the whole issue of minutes police, usage of young players like Tyler Kolek and all of that? How much of this is reasonable and how much of this is just a narrative?
That's the million-dollar question. I think if people know my work, I tend to be somewhere. I try to be nuanced about pretty much any issue, and I think there is a lot of nuance to this one. And I think there are definitely times where Tibbs takes too long to take out his starters, puts them in harm's way unnecessarily. I think over the last, basically since the All-Star break, when the Knicks seed was essentially determined based on the standings, they were going to be the third seed. To not play a Kolek a little bit more earlier on to see what you have, even if it's for next year, this is a great opportunity when the games don't matter for this season to a large extent to see what you have. Maybe this is a guy that can help you next season, and that could play into your offseason decisions in terms of how you add around this roster. Well, if I know I have a backup point guard that I don't have to pay a lot of money because he's a second-round pick, that helps me a lot for next season. But now I don't necessarily have such a feel for what he can give me because I limited his minutes. So that stuff is frustrating. I thought there were moments at the end of December where even Campaign, who I think had a very nice backup point guard season for the Knicks at the minimum, he's given them a lot. He stopped playing second halves, and Jalen Brunson was playing full second halves against the Wizards. That on its face is a little bit nuts. So So that there are certain things that are totally crazy. There are other things where, like, Mikal Bridges always plays every game. And he plays every game his whole career. And, like, the idea that he can't play 38 on a given night, I think, is a bit much. Like, that, those criticisms get a little bit out of hand. And generally, like, Josh Hart, OG Anunoby, these guys are big wings, durable players. Like, I don't think there's a ton there to get too upset about. It's more on the margins. I think it's fair to criticize him for certainly, like, late-game situations, playing guys full second half. Like, the stuff that on his face is nuts. Other stuff is a bit nitpicky at times, I think.
Talking to Benji Ritholtz here on The Fan. And Benji, as we look ahead now to the end of the season and the playoffs, what does success look like for you for the Knicks? What would they have to do for you to say, all right, this was this season was a success?
Yeah, before the season, I would have said conference finals. And the reason I would have said that is because I looked at the rest of the East and I didn't see a team that was so clearly better than the Knicks other than the Celtics. And what's changed this season is the emergence of the Cleveland Cavaliers as an elite basketball team. And that hasn't only changed like the ceiling of a conference finals, perhaps. It's also changed that the Knicks, because the Cavs are the one seed, are now going to meet the Boston Celtics in the second round. And we've basically known this for weeks now. And we know what the Celtics have done to the Knicks. Every single game they've played this season, the games have not been close. And so the idea that it's conference finals or bust now for this team, I think is a bit crazy, because they're going to meet the same team that we would have said they were going to lose to in the conference finals. They're just going to meet them in the second round. That shouldn't necessarily change our analysis based on our understandings of the rosters going into the season. What I would say is they can't go to Boston and get blown out and lose in five games in a series that you didn't put up any kind of effort or fight. If that happens, I think you're going to look at a lot of things, including the coach. If they put up a real fight, if they're in the games, if they show some versatility and they make some adjustments in that matchup and find a way to give the Celtics a real fight, I don't think that makes the season a failure. I think that you're hopefully answering questions as to how you can get better going into year two, year three of this experiment. That I think is fine. A lot depends on how the series against the Celtics looks. That obviously assumes they win their first round series. If they lose their first round series, that's a whole different, that is a failure, I think it's fair to say.
What is it about that matchup against the Celtics? I see teams like, I'll just throw one out, Detroit Pistons, where, all right, so they lose to the Celtics by 10 a couple times, and they turn around in February and they actually beat the Celtics 117-97. I don't expect the Knicks to be a better team than the Celtics, but what is it about the matchup with this year's team versus last year's team? I look at this year's team, and I mean, last year's team, if they had not gotten hurt the way they did, I was interested in seeing what the Knicks would have done to that Celtics team. I kind of thought, well, they'll probably lose, but there's a chance. What is it about this year's team that they just absolutely have been shellacked and embarrassed by the Celtics?
Yeah, I think part of it is that they tried to match the Celtics' style and personnel and aren't as good at it this season. Whereas last season, it was a contrast of styles. And the Knicks could beat the Celtics up a little bit, right? And the Knicks won a lot of games last season on the backs of extra possessions, offensive rebounding. They'd often take 10, 15 more shots than their opponents. Even if they weren't making shots, they were finding ways to generate points. And that's with Isaiah Hartenstein, of course, leading the charge as an offensive rebounder. And Josh Hart coming off the bench as an energy guy and changing games with his energy. And now it's kind of like, well, we have a five-out offense similar to Boston. We have a five who shoots the ball like Boston does. And it's like, but we're not as good in that five-out offense generating open threes as Boston is. Boston has mastered that style. And so you look at that on the offensive end, and then defensively, all of a sudden, whereas last season, okay, they could pick at Jalen Brunson, but that wasn't necessarily, there were ways that the Knicks could kind of hide Brunson, hedge and recover, figure out how to move off of him. Now you can attack Towns and drop. And man, Boston, if you have a weak drop defender, they're just going to expose you and they're going to get open threes. And that's what they've done. They've attacked Towns relentlessly in that matchup and they've just gotten open shots. I blame Tibbs a little bit for, again, not adjusting the scheme at all, allowing Towns to switch a little bit. There's stuff that you can do to hopefully slow down that attack. But when you have a center who struggles that much defensively and you're playing him back to the basket, well, it's going to be easy for Boston to get open threes, and that's what they've done. They've really exposed the Knicks in that way.
All right. Benji Ritholtz, Knicks Film School. Really, really appreciate the time. If you're not following Benji and that team, you should be. Benji, we'll catch up with you down the road. Really appreciate it.
Really appreciate having me, Lori. This was awesome. Thanks
All right.
again.